Good evening to all again. It is good to be here. Thank you, Brother Daniel, for those words. And before we get started, I forgot about putting the song on the board, our little song that I would like you to learn real quick this weekend. It's pretty simple, and so you can maybe start humming along with a few of us that do know it. I am determined and I've made up my mind, I will serve the Lord. That's pretty easy, isn't it? We get that? I'm determined and I've made up my mind, I will serve the Lord. I've left the world and its pleasures behind, I will serve the Lord. I'll follow wherever He leads me, I'll pasture wherever He feeds me, for I am determined and I've made up my mind, I will serve the Lord. Let's try it again. I am determined and I've made up my mind, I will serve the Lord. I've left the world and its pleasures behind. I will serve the Lord. I'll follow wherever He feeds me. I'll pasture wherever He leads me. For I am determined and I've made up my mind. I will serve the Lord. Thank you. That had a lot more volume than it did this afternoon. Very good. Okay, the lesson for tonight is on child training. And there's still room up front if any of you ladies with little children want to come up closer so you can hear good. I've heard different comments, and I know I don't want you to be nervous. I don't want any of you, even you men with babies. We had 12. We know what it's like. They cry in church. They, you know, they sleep at wrong times, and they're awake when you wish they were sleeping. And we know how it is. And I don't want this tonight to be anything to make you feel bad. I was at a place one time when a brother made a comment, kind of like Brother Daniel did. He said, "You stepped on my toes," and I said, "Well, I'm sorry. I meant to be stepping on your heart." So I just want to be an encouragement, and I don't want to be sounding critical of anybody. But I think it does us all good to evaluate sometimes where we are when you're in the middle of it. Just, you know, you can take a test from some of the things that we'll plan to talk about tonight and see where I'm at. You know, is a little warning light coming on, or is you know, are the dash lights flashing? We need to make some solid adjustments. How should we order the child? And that title just comes from Judges 13. I'm not going to spend much time at all in there, but that's just where the title comes from. And when the angel came to Mrs. Manoah, and she got Manoah involved, and the angel came back and told what manner of child Samson would be. And when Manoah heard it, he said, "Now let thy words come to pass." But angel, how shall we order the child? How are we supposed to bring this child up? And how shall we do unto him? And haven't we as parents been asking ourselves that all down through the years? How shall we bring up our children? And, you know, I don't know why it is, but we, you know, we come into the job of parenting, having children with no experience. We've never done it before. And then, you know, anyway, by the time we get old, then we're not having children anymore. And I know that's God's way. But how should we order the child? I remember back from years ago when President Bush was in office and he implemented a program, No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind. And this was for educational purposes. But I like to think of it as we think about our children growing up, that every child is taught, trained, and guarded, that no child is left behind. My burden is for us as parents and even grandparents, and that our children are precious to us, and that we are burdened with teaching them, with getting their hearts. You know what it's like, and you know that we keep their hearts. You know what it's like to hold that precious little newborn, and they're so sweet. And so soon, the years go by, and that little baby all at once is up, and like some of these young boys that I met today, I hadn't seen for years, and now I got to look up to them. And it goes by so quick. And there are so many opportunities along to lose that heart. And we need to be taking the opportunities to keep that heart. I'm so glad Jesus loved the children when he was on earth. Jesus loves the little children. I like that song, that little children song. It's about my level. Jesus loves the little children. He rebuked the disciples for trying to get them away and telling the mothers to get them out of here. And he said, "Let the little children come to me, for of such is the kingdom. And unless you become like these little children, you won't enter my kingdom." And I would like to tell all of you children here that can listen. I like to talk to children quite a bit. And when you can listen to me talking, I'm telling you right now that we're glad you're here. And we're glad God gave you to your family. We're glad for the little babies that are here. They're too little to be listening to what I'm saying. We're glad you're here. And I'm glad when you built this church, you didn't put on some special room somewhere so all the children could be out there and be entertained and playing and having a good time in their worship while we're in here. I'm glad that you didn't build a place like this, that the children are here with us. And we want to keep that culture alive. And maybe I should say something while we're talking about little children in the service. I have also seen men talk to men who got upset about babies crying in church. And I know there's a ditch on both sides of the road. But you know, when a baby's crying in church, there's probably a couple things going on. And one of them is that there's a mother that hardly knows what to do. And should she get up? Should she stay here a little bit? And you could pray for that mother. I think that would be a lot better response than starting to get aggravated. And of course, there's on the other side when a baby's starting to cry and you can tell it's going to be a long spell, it's time to get up and move out with the baby and take care of the baby's needs. But be glad we have babies here. They're the future of our church. And to the moms and dads, we're glad you're here too and brought your children. You know, there's one thing that our children should never remember, and I've probably most of you don't remember it either, but our children should never remember the first time they go to church. It should just be something that they just, all their life. We love the children. God loves the children. Have you ever thought about the surprise that Adam had when his first child was born? Genesis 4:1 says that Adam knew his wife and she bare a son. And Adam said, and I can hear with surprise in his voice, "I've gotten a man from the Lord." Adam had never seen this little baby. And we've seen babies all our life, right? But don't we get amazed every time we see this little teeny bundle with those little teeny hands and those little teeny feet? And we just get amazed all over. And here was Adam. He had never seen anything like it. And he was amazed. "I've got a man from the Lord." But what do you see when you look at a baby? What do you see when you look at a baby? And I was wishing there would be an infant here tonight. At home one time when I preached this message, we had a grandson that was only about, I think, 2 or 3 weeks old. And so I had the privilege of getting him and holding him up here and talking about this little baby for a while, but I couldn't find any that fit the category. There were a couple that are just a little too old, and I don't know, they may have a little too much fun being up here. But what do you see when you see that little tiny baby? One of the things we see in that baby is that he's made in the image of his parents. Isn't it interesting? You see that little baby, and oh, he looks like his mama's son. Oh, I see his daddy in him, and all that stuff. Made in the image. God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And then later on in Genesis, Seth, and in chapter 5, verse 3, he begat a son, and it was after his image. And this is the path of life. So that's one thing we see. Another thing we see is that this little bundle will respond to love. This little bundle will respond to love. We're made to do that. Another thing we see is that this little bundle will very soon show his selfishness. He will very soon show his carnality. Very soon his humanity will be there, and all that sweet little bundle that you cooed over, all at once he's showing himself that there was something in there, that all this bad that just comes out, and you never taught him to do that. That's what happens to that little bundle. And this little bundle will stay very self-centered unless you redirect his steps. If he's not trained, he will stay self-centered. And he will show his stubborn will very soon. And Proverbs says he will bring his mother to shame if the rod and reproof are not used, if he's left to himself, Proverbs 29:15. This little bundle, imagine I'm holding here, is an eternal soul, has a destiny of heaven or hell. But I also see in this little bundle the potential for a young man or woman who is a socially adjusted disciple of Jesus, who takes God's way and continues the cycle of marriage, bearing children, teaching, disciplining, and keeping the process going. I wish the Bible had more explicit teaching on child training. There's not just a lot of verses, but I would like to highlight a few. You can follow along. Psalm 103, 13 and 14 says, like as a father pitieth his children, has compassion on his children, so the Lord pitieth. The Lord has compassion on them that fear him. Important point there, fathers. For he knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. Do we remember this little bitty baby that we held in our arms, and how weak, frail, dependent, needy? God remembers. He remembers. Even when we grow up tall enough, we can stand and walk and run and all that stuff. He remembers that we're just dust. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 22:15 says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. That's what Brother Daniel's talking about. Didn't say anything about time out. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Ephesians 6:4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Okay, how are we going to get from infancy, from when I can hold that little grandson who now is too big to hold like that, how can we get that child from infancy to the goal that we want? I want to talk about essentials for child training. I think I have seven things. Excuse me. Thank you, Brother John. And the first one I have listed is dad must be actively involved in home life. And I know sometimes there's death and other things where dad can't be, but I'm talking about in normal home situations. Dad must be actively involved. Probably going to be a little rough on dads tonight. Frank Reed, I don't know how many of you know of him, but he made a statement, passive dads and aggressive moms make angry children. Passive dads and aggressive moms make angry children. Do you know why a lot of times moms get aggressive? It's because dad was passive. If she didn't do it, who would? Dads, you need to be with the family as much as possible, figuring out how you can get home, not how you can get away. You have a responsibility. I know sometimes, we need some time out, don't we? What do we think about our wife? You need to be there with your children and wife helping. Think of your home as a unit. And if you as leader dad are not there, there's something very much lacking. Dads, you need to know your children. You need to know them. You need to look them in the eye. And I feel pretty strong about this one. And if you haven't had a habit of looking your children in the eyes, I would encourage you to do so. That's the gateway to the soul. And when you look somebody in the eyes, it's something about it, isn't it? And you can see in your children very quickly, is all clear or is it clouded? Is there something you can... And it might be as something as simple, in the evening as I had a bad day at school and the teacher gave me a bad grade and it's troubling. Or it could be something a lot, lot deeper. But dads, you need to know your children. When you look at them in the eyes, do they look the other way? You probably remember a time your dad looked at you and you looked the other way because you knew something was wrong. Right? I think we all would remember some of that. Isn't that what happened to Peter? He couldn't look Jesus in the eye. When Jesus looked at Peter there in Pilate's hall, Peter had just denied Jesus 3 times, and Jesus looked at him. I think that was a look of compassion, and he looked at him, and Peter just turned and was gone. Do you enter into their world? Or must they always enter into yours? When have you played with them last? Are we so busy? We got to make a living. We got to go. When have you played with them last? Notice each one and talk one to one. I know how it is. The days can float by and you grow apart, even while you live in the same house. Yes, Dad, I think it would even be good to sometimes put the phone away. I think it's a good habit to put the phone away for mealtime. We have so little time together. And I think your business calls will wait. That person that needs us to come combine their beans, or they need you to build their house or what, it will wait till after supper and another time when your children are taken care of. But your children won't wait. They keep growing. Be the leader. Don't force your wife to make the decisions that you neglected. That's where we started from. Passive dads and aggressive moms make angry children when they grow up. Moms must keep priorities right as well. We talk to the dads, now the moms. What is your most important task, Mom? What is the most important thing that you have to do? Could I just say it? The job that you have with your children is much more important than hosting any kind of a party or pursuing any kind of a hobby. Not that these things are wrong in themselves, but I want to impress you with the job that is your utmost, highest responsibility. with those babies on your lap and growing up and in school, taking care of the house. Moms, do everything you can to make your home a secure haven for those in your charge. And I believe that sometimes you'll just need to give up some activities, some hobbies that you really wish you could do, because you have a more urgent need. So be careful of being distracted, occupied with phone time. Maybe it's even counseling or hosting. Ask yourself the question, are the children neglected? The third essential is a relaxed atmosphere. I think this can be a test for us. What is the atmosphere like in our home? You know, dads were gone a lot. We get home and sit down in the evening. What is the atmosphere like? And if the atmosphere is tense, I've had a lot of pressure and there's a lot of tension in the air, something needs to be done. It'd be nice to have an indicator like we do in our vehicles, maybe that show, you know, are we running up towards the red line or not? But where are we at? Where is the needle? Is there continual tension, or is there a calmness between parents and siblings? Can we have a good time together? I think one of the things that kills a calmness in the home is the way we talk to each other. Listen to your children. Do you allow them to have a high-pitched whine? Do you know what I mean? Maybe your children never do that. You don't know what I'm talking about. And they go, bah, 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 bah. And then what does that usually do? Isn't it pretty easy to talk back to, what did I call him this morning? Shorty, I think. Talk back to Shorty and say, well, I told you 100 times if you wouldn't do that. You know what you're doing? You're just getting him set up to come back to you with some more whiny talk. But if you can get that child to calm their voice and tell you plainly and calmly what happened. Well, one thing, usually the crime doesn't seem near as big in a normal tone of voice. You know, somebody pushed him or grabbed his toy or something. It just doesn't sound near as bad when it's and as serious. But listen to yourself the way you talk to your children. I say it again, that like breeds like, and it's easy for us children, us big children, us parents, to get a little bit of a whine back to them instead of just talking in normal tones. I think it's disrespectful to talk whiny to anyone. I would really not expect it at all if one of you would come and talk to me and start whining about something. I really wouldn't expect it. So I encourage you to make a whining child stop and speak in normal tones. Number four is establish authority. For children to receive instruction, they must first respect the position of the one in authority. Authority is the right to rule and administrate judgment. God is the ultimate authority, and He sets authorities. And the ultimate authority said, children, obey your parents. And the parents, as you as parents, are authorized to carry this out. Now, can you imagine telling your little child, let's say you take your two-year-old and you try to sit down and you impress them with, you know, God said you're supposed to, and give them a lecture about all this. Usually doesn't, you don't get very far. And I'll repeat that carrying out your authority of making this happen, this child obeying, is the only way to establish your authority. And I think it's true not only in home authority, but if you want to use it that way, you could apply it into your business. You could apply it to the church. You can't just say your authority, but authority shows itself by carrying out that authority, and that establishes that authority. And children need to know that the parents are in authority. And I would say here too that dad and mom are equal authority to the children. Mom's voice is softer, but must be respected and backed by dad. And I remind you too that the children get a picture of God when they see the parents living out their authority. And if you want the children to accept the authority that's over them, you need to accept the authority that's over you. So establish your authority and kind, loving, discipline. Anyway, we'll get on to more of that later, but authority must be established in the home. And I will say it here again, that when your authority is established, you don't have to remind the children that I'm your dad and you need to do this. I mean, do you have an idea that they forgot who their dad was that you need to tell them? They know that. Establish your authority by carrying out your authority and establish it. All right, number five is training and discipline. I think of training and discipline, this is such an important thing, to train the children, not just discipline, and I'll emphasize that spankings are not nearly the only part of raising children and disciplining and teaching them right. Children need to be trained. Can you imagine an elephant trainer? And all he did was discipline the elephant for not doing right. He wouldn't have much of a show at the zoo, would he? If all he'd ever done was just whip the elephant because he didn't do right. They have to be shown what to do. I thought about apple trees and the way in Mexico where I have two sisters there and we have a daughter there, and in that area, they grow lots of apples. And their network of cables and how all the apple limbs are just tied right to those cables, it's just amazing. And they produce a lot better that way. But can you imagine taking a full-grown apple tree, putting up your cables and grabbing those limbs and just coming back with them and tying them? You wouldn't have an apple tree, would you? It takes training to do that from little up. Remember that your children are not adults. They haven't had experience, and much patience is needed. Don't expect adult performance from your children, and at the same time, don't let rebellion go by unheeded. Training starts very early. And as soon as connections are made, they need to learn that actions produce consequences. As soon as a child can make connections, and I like to use the illustration of a high chair, and you've probably heard this before, but you know, when you put that little teeny tot, when they first sit in a high chair and they're just happy to take their hand and knock the plate off, the food off, and anything, you know, they're just having a big time. But it won't be too long until they'll get their cup and drop it off, and then they look over to see where it went. And then you know, okay, they're starting to put two and two together. They're making a connection there. Or they get a brush in their hands and they might be upside down, but it goes up to the head. They're starting to get a connection. And when that happens, that's when you start this training process. Action produce consequences. Train and discipline your children to know that yes is yes and no is no. And if I could just put one thing for you to take home tonight in your child training, if you can speak in normal tones to your children, give them a command, and they accept your yes or your no, then God bless you. You've passed the test, good. And I think this is one of the most important things, is for your children to just know that when you say yes, that you mean yes. And when you say no, that's what you mean. But I want to tell you another thing that fails the test. It's a red line, if you know what I mean. It's when you give that normal tone command. If you give a command in a normal tone to a child and they turn around and say no, that's a red line. Don't let that go past. They tell me that on the highway, they're over in Georgia anyway, highway patrols, if you're over the three digit, you know what that means. If you're driving over the three digit and they stop you, that's a red line. You're going to jail. And I know a young man it happened to, and he spent the night in the jail. Red line. Well, I want to tell you again, if your child, if you give a command, reasonable command in a normal tone, and he turns around and says, no, it's a red line. That's rebellion. And if you want to let it go and deal with it when the child gets 15, you know what will happen. Parents, you have a God-given responsibility to see that every command you give is carried out. It is better not to give a command than to give one and not see it through. And I know that sometimes children go through these tough times. We hear of the terrible twos, and I wonder if it's because we didn't make the 18 month. We didn't win the victory at 18 months. That's why we call it the terrible twos. But they go through spells where you think you've done about all you can do. I understand that. And I know sometimes I've seen parents that were in that, and they knew they were maybe going home tired, whatever, and they just elected to go pick up those toys themselves rather than fight that battle right there. Because when you give a command, you need to see to it that you have the strength and can see it out. Train and discipline them to know that a normal tone command is all that is needed. A quiet yes should mean the same. And I think it will mean more than a loud yes or no. Do not yell at them. Learn to say it once. I remember years ago picking up children at Bible school, had the van loaded, and by the end of the week, everybody was familiar with everybody, and it was chaos in my van. And so I said, children, they couldn't hear it. So I went up some, I don't know how many decimals. They still didn't hear it. So finally, I won't demonstrate, but I went loud. And little Tracy was sitting right behind me, and he said, Mr. Sim, is that the last time? He had been trained that three times. He could get by. He knew he could get by until it got to the third time. Don't do that. Don't yell at your children. Directing children by hollering is as futile as guiding the car with the horn. Train your children that they accept that you know what they need. I think, parents, you're smart enough, you're wise enough, that when it's mealtime, you know what your children need. Not trying to figure out what they want. The guessing game is a poor game for parents to play with children. And I've heard it, not around here, of course. You know, if Shorty's at the table and he goes, and oh, do you want some milk? Do you want Cheerios? Do you want, and you can keep on and on and on, and Shorty just keep, I just wondered, you know, are we smart enough to know what they need? And so give them what they need rather than trying to figure out finally. Do you know what kind of young person that's when he leaves that shorty stage and he grows up? What kind of what all's going to be that you're going to have to deal with. But parents are wise enough to know what children need, and when you have trained the children to sweetly accept that, you have come a long ways in training. I would say another thing while we're here, and this isn't even in my notes, but I'm impressed right now with all the hunger that's in the world. Maybe you read the CAM update on Cuba recently, or maybe you the famine in Sudan, I believe it is, where people are, they just declared famine the other day, where a certain amount of people are dying of starvation and hunger-related issues a day, and certain percentage have to be living in hunger. And I'm just impressed around so many places how there's so little food. And here we have so much. And we just have to decide what we want to eat and what we don't want to eat. And then I've seen children where, oh, I don't like green beans and I don't like, and you start listing it, and so you figure out. I want to tell you, if we were in a hunger situation like so many people in the world, we wouldn't even be having the conversations about, I don't like that, I don't want that. And parents, you will always do your children a favor if you make them learn to eat what they don't even like. They don't have to like it. It's about nourishment. That's what we sit down to eat for. They don't have to like it. And about 9 times out of 10, when they grow up, they'll like the thing they thought they didn't like. Where are we at? Training and discipline. Watch for children nagging. And we talked about the whiny voice already. But not accepting directions so they nag. Nagging and whining is evidence of a will that's not submitted and that's looking for loopholes. You will do your favor. You will do your children a great favor. Again, back to accepting your yes or your no. And I don't mean that you're hard-nosed and sometimes realize, well, you know what, that was a little bit, what, one way or the other. So, yeah. But mean yes when you say it and mean no when you say it. And I would say on this training and discipline, don't overdo the reward system. Sometimes I think we're in a candy culture. And so, you know, if you get 3 wrong, well, you only get 2 pieces of candy. You know, everything's rewarded with candy. We have a man that he's actually a member of our church. That he was a Vietnam vet, and he has a service dog with him, and the dog always is looking for a reward, and he'll put his nose up to the pouch because he knows where it is, and he's looking for his reward. And don't overdo the reward system. Children need to learn. They obey. You know, don't we have to, as adults, don't we sometimes have to learn to just be good for nothing? What reward do we get out of it? Well, the rewards, yeah, in child training, they're way on down the road, maybe. But your children don't always have to be rewarded. Well, on this point, I'm going to close it with an encouragement to make the outer control strong while the child is little. How many inner controls do your little children have? Those little ones snuggled up to you right now and sitting on your lap, how many inner controls do they have? Well, it's just a gracious few, isn't it? Isn't that being nice to them? Just to say they don't have many? So you have to put outer controls on them. And I've seen parents make the mistake of letting the outer controls pretty loose when the child was little, but then as they grow up, try to come down on the outer controls when this child is growing up, and it doesn't work. But if you put the outer controls on them while there's no inner controls there, and you keep the outer controls there until the inner controls develop, then when they grow up, you can release, and I hate to tell you, but you will have to release one day, because one day they're gone. And you wish so bad sometimes that you could speak again into your child's life and you could tell them something. Well, you can tell them, but they're an adult. So what I'm saying, I'm just encouraging you to be consistent with your outer controls until your child develops the inner controls, and then you can relax them. All right, teaching is another one. Teaching. And on this one, I can't overemphasize the importance of family worship. And I know we're in a busy, busy world. We have so much to do, and I wonder, do we realize what is the most important thing that we have to do? And dads, I hope you have the burden for family worship. The scripture often talks of telling the generation to come of the mercy and the faithfulness and the goodness of God. And I'm asking, do we do that enough? And dads, what a better time than to gather when your children are gathered together. I like to think of family worship as a time when it's just that. It's not just putting in some little legalistic time together so we can say, yeah, we have family worship, but where it's family worship. You know what I mean? Worship. Worship the King. And it's just a wonderful time. If the children don't see an excitement in dad and mom for worship and for walking with the Lord and living for the Lord, what's the drawing card for them? And it's an excellent time for us, dad and mom, to teach the children and to tell of the goodness and the greatness of God to the generation to come. I think we do well at providing the physical needs of our children, but maybe we come up lacking on the spiritual and emotional needs of our children. And what a wonderful time to put to practice many of the points already that we've touched on. When we have family worship, it's a time to have a lesson of the little ones sitting on your lap quietly. I recommend that family worship should be a time of reverence and where everybody is engaged in the family worship, not a time of cutting up. And I know children, and I remember times that I could tell you stories, but it isn't story time right now. But family worship should be a time where everybody is involved and where things are done on the age level of the children and where you can connect with the children and when you can see where the children are and get them to pick a song and to see to it that they help sing. You know, children tend to go through this thing when they're little, they'll belt it out singing and they get up a little bigger, then it's not cool to sing, I guess. That shouldn't be allowed. Worship, it's family worship. And when we have family worship during the week, then we gather together on Sunday as a collective worship. It's the only difference. Well, I don't know about the only one, but we're just gathering together again to worship God. And I'll tell you something else. Started out talking about that little chap on your lap that just can't hold still. It's a good time for the lesson. And what happens when you go to church is the test. If you fail the test, it's not the end of the world. You failed tests in school. We go back and study again. Go back to your lesson during the week again. Holding that child. They need to learn it. It's time to be quiet and hold still. Just one of the good things about family worship. Teach principles to your children. Start when they're little. Little ones grasp them as facts of life when they're taught at a young age. I remember hearing years ago, Catholics would say, if you give me a child till he's six, he'll always be a Catholic. And what about if we would be more intent on teaching principles to our children from the Word of God. Principles of modesty, for example, the principles of decency. And I encourage you, moms, particularly, to dress your children by the same principles that God has for us older ones. Sure, they won't look just like mom's clothing, but the principle of modesty, doesn't matter what age of the child. Simplicity. Not according to fad and fashion. Dressing in a way that takes attention off of self. These are principles that need to be started when the child is little. And if it doesn't, and if you frill and fancy and doll up and whatever how you want to describe it, and this child grows up, and then he gets up to where this child says, well, I want to give my heart to the Lord, and I want to be a member of the church. And they say, well, now we're going to have to change this and that. Why? Well, the church, that is a lame excuse. That's a lame excuse. And then they'll start saying, well, what's wrong with it? But if you teach those principles and instill it when that child is little, say, look, sissy, we're going to dress modestly. We don't want fancy clothing. And if they've heard that from before they can remember it, it will make a huge difference. And you'll have completely something different to deal with than the other scenario that I just mentioned. Because usually what that will do will make a sour taste for the body of Christ. Teach your children principles. Number 7 is binding up. Binding up. Without the rod, without pain, we will not learn that actions bring consequences. Children, I don't know where to mention it this weekend, but you know, when a child is born, the lobe in the back of the brain is fully developed, the one that controls breathing and heart rate and those automatic functions. The lobe on the frontal lobe, the one that has to do with logic and reasoning, is not developed when a baby is born. And I hate to even say how old a child is before they say it's fully developed. I didn't come up with this. It's just what they say. The last time I preached this, a young man went home and he said, well, I was intrigued with that. And he started doing research on it, so you're welcome to do the same. But this frontal lobe, the one that has to do with logic and reasoning, is not fully developed until a youth is up in the low 20s. Now, I hope y'all still love me. I know you're not there yet. And I think, parents, we can help that process of logic and reasoning. But I want to give you one thing to think of. How old do you have to be before you can go rent a car? Maybe you've never tried it, but you got to be 25. Why did they do that? Somehow they figured out that up until that lobe gets fully developed, youth will take risks that they wouldn't take if they had a few more years under their belt. Children do not learn without pain. You can talk until you're blue in the face, and what they learn when you discipline them, they learn that if I do that, I'll hurt, I'll get pain. There's not much logic and reasoning to that. That's just learning that actions bring consequences. We have an old wood stove in our house, been there since 1977, and we love it. Fired it up the other day with that cold spell, and it feels so good. Made of really thick steel. It's an old Fisher stove. Very seldom has any child ever been burned on it. There's no fancy little jacket on it. It's just solid. It's just heavy steel. And no child has been burned twice on it. You know why? The pain was enough. I figured it out. It doesn't work. It won't touch it. All right. Now, said this is about binding up, and the binding up is because we as parents will need to administer pain. Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him. And I'll just say, when it's needed, betimes. When it's needed. Hebrews 12, for whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. This is still the Bible way to bring up children. And again, I emphasize there's a lot more to child training than spankings. But without the infliction of pain, I don't believe that we will get what we want from the finished product. I think that spanking should be done when at a time in the child's life when he won't remember most of them. Because I believe if you get hold of that child's rebellion, keep it in check when he's little, he'll probably remember a few. I know I do. But I don't believe you'll have to be spending an excessive amount of time spanking children that are old enough they're going to remember it. But yes, there'll be times that will be needed too. I'm saying start on time. But make sure the child is old enough to connect the dots and they know why the infliction of pain. And be consistent with it. I should have mentioned that. Be consistent with your children. Don't laugh at them one day and crack down on them the next. But again, your children will need discipline. And a few things about a spanking. Basically, take the child out of public when you do it. I don't think it's respectful to the child. I don't think it's for the best interest of the child just to pick the child up and basically take the child out. Go off to your room. Be calm. You're in no position to exercise your authority if you're not under your authority. And your authority says for you to don't be angry. Don't provoke your children to anger. You can't be in anger and disciplining your children. We knew that about my parents. We just knew they would not discipline us if their emotions weren't in check. And I had a brother that he tried it. One time he was just about to get it. And he looked up at Mom and said, Mom, are you sure you're not angry? She wasn't. But be calm. Talk about the transgression with your child. I'm not talking about reasoning and logic and trying to get them to where the light will come on and they understand. Oh, yeah, I see it now. I'll always do good. No, but they need to know. And then you can ask them just simple little things like, now, what did you do? And usually by that time, they know what's coming. I told a lie. And is that good or bad? It's bad. Well, what should I do to you? I need a spanking. They're usually that honest with it. But make sure they know the transgression and they know why the discipline. And then administrate the discipline on the place that God made for it. There should not be marks up and down the back and legs when you discipline a child, when you spank. And it needs to be hard enough that the point gets across. And again, a difference, you know, I've talked quite a bit about the difference between the old days and the new days. But in the old days, we didn't have the Pampers. We didn't have the heavy jeans. We wish for all that kind of a padding, maybe. And if you just fan that little behind a little bit that has all that padding on it, you know what's going to happen? You're not going to get through. And your child will tell you when he gets through. It will show you when you spank the child. And it hurts, and the child cries, and you can tell the cries because they're hurting and not because they're just being rebellious. If they're just kicking and screaming and yelling, yet you haven't gotten through. But when you spank a child properly, they'll sit there, and I always like to take them on my lap and just hold them there and let them cry a while and then tell them, after a while, say, okay, that's enough. It's a good time for dad and mom to wipe their tears, too. It should hurt mom and dad when they have to spank as well. And hold them close, let them cry, and then tell them to go wash their face. Might be even a good time to sing a song with them before they go. And the child will just be so free. And they go wash your face, go back to play, and it's taken care of again. Their conscience is clean. They're free. You don't bring it back up and remind them how many times I've had to spank you for this same thing. Give them a squeeze. Tell them you love them. This is binding up. That's binding up. And that's, why is this important? Just because of the way my mom and dad are, just because of what? No. This is important because this is the way God does it. In Job, he says, for he maketh sore and bindeth up. He woundeth and his hands make whole. Lamentations 3, but though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies. For he doth not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men to crush under his feet all the prisoners of the earth. I see the heart of God. He knows what we need. And so sometimes he does allow us to go through hard things, painful things, but he's always there to bind us up. And that's the heart of God. I think we can see the heart of God in that. And remember, it's an important way to give your children their first impression of God, as I mentioned that already, but when they see that you mean what you say, discipline will be carried out for wrongdoing, but you still love them, you bind them up, you give them a squeeze, you give them a kiss, you tell them you love them, and they start getting the idea, okay, well, that's God. He means what he says. That's the Bible. He means what he says. And if I don't obey the Bible, there's going to be trouble. And all the while, God is there to bind us up. What else yet? I want to tell you yet, two parents, that protect your children. Protect your children. I don't mean that we should be paranoid and just think that, you know, there's a devil behind every bush. And no, I'm not talking about that. But be observant. Not negligent, not ignorant, but you need to protect your children. You need to know where they are. You have friends over playing. You need to know where the children are. And you don't have to act like the patrol just across the hill, you know, taking radar, where your children know, boy, they're spying for me, just trying to get me in a trap. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I remember one time, several of our grandchildren were at our house, and they were out playing, and they were on their bicycles, and they were in the shop, and I think I was in the office, and Sarah came to me with a little bowl of strawberries. And she said, would you take these, go check on the children? They're just playing out in the shop. So I take those strawberries and go out there, and I just stood around the corner a little bit and listening, and there they were, bicycle turned upside down, the chain was off, and they were just having a good cousin time. Everything was just lovely. I mean, it could have been a Rod and Staff story. It was so good. So I just took the strawberries and said, hey, would y'all like some strawberries? And we just had a good time talking. They never knew the main purpose that I went out there for, just to check on them, make sure everything was okay. And I want to tell you again, look your children in the eyes. And I believe that all of us are wise enough to know the difference between clear eyes and troubled eyes. I can't imagine children that have been sinned against to have clear eyes. And I can't imagine parents missing it if you were looking in those eyes. And again, it may be something very simple. But when you see into the eyes of a child, you're looking into their soul. And this is why, I mean, it's good to look into the eyes of your wife and your children, but you don't just go staring at people in their eyes. There's something about it. But when you see your children, look them in the eyes. Make sure all is clear. And I want to close with a plea to keep the heart of your children. Keep the heart of your children. I just love to see the children, and I've seen them this evening snuggle up to mom and or dad, and you know, they're just so sweet. If you don't keep their heart, if you lose their heart, somebody else will find it, and it will be a sad day. I believe that our children, dads, I'm back on y'all again, but our children should find a lot of security in their dad. They should know that you love them beyond the shadow of a doubt, that you're there to protect them. And they'll pour that love back on you. Oh, God, help us that our children will be raised with that kind of security and our homes are strong for the Lord, that we have these children that grow up to be strong men and women for the Lord. God bless you. Take courage. I know the load's heavy. God knows why He gave children to children. When you get to be our age, you're just like, you know, sometimes the grandchildren make you glad twice. You know, we just can't take exactly what everything we used to. And God bless you, give you strength, and keep up the fight. If you need to make some little adjustments, do it, but keep going. Loving your children, teaching, training them is well worth it. There's nothing much more satisfying than, well, I'm going to stop. Have another sermon tomorrow. God bless you.